The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway on this Thursday morning. Good morning. You get up and get going. I'm glad that you are doing so with me. On Sunday night, I do want to remind all my listeners on 98.9 in Columbus and those down in Dayton and Cincinnati who want to drive up to Columbus, or those in Cleveland and Toledo who want to drive over to Columbus or down to Columbus, I am moderating a debate featuring six Republican would-be senators. The six serious candidates, and other people are running, but these are the six that have met the criteria to be in the debate, the first debate for what will be a wide-open primary to replace Senator Rob Portman, who's retiring from the United States Senate. Matt Dolan, state senator. Mike Gibbons, a businessman. Josh Mandel, former Ohio state treasurer. Bernie Marino, also a high-tech businessman, great entrepreneur. Jane Timken, formerly chairwoman of the state GOP. J.D. Vance, author and public policy analyst and investor. Those six will provide a full spectrum discussion of GOP issues and responses. I'd be co-moderated by my longtime friend, Aaron Baer, from the Center for Christian Virtue, which is the public policy wonky shop on behalf of culture and politics, pro-life, pro-religious liberty in Columbus. Aaron and I have known each other from the day that he worked for Mark Brnovich in Arizona and others. And I am looking forward to this. And if you can still, there are about 1,000 people already have tickets given out through the campaigns. But a few tickets are available if you want to get it. I'll tweet out where it's going to be. But it's 7 to 9 p.m. It's going to be robust. It's going to be a lot of fun. I have not done a debate in a whole 2 months since we did the recall debate in California. And I love doing them. I think I know how to moderate them as well as anyone in the United States, because the story is about who's on the stage and what they're answering, and good question sets. Question sets that should be about what Republican voters in a primary want to know about, not what elite media figures want to argue and embarrass Republicans about. And so I will do the Hughes rules. No question longer than 30 seconds. No response longer than 75 seconds. No right of reply. You just have to preserve your time and reserve your remarks until it comes around to you again. Same question, sometimes a little bit different, maybe a couple of aspects. It's all up to me and my colleague Aaron Baer. But the question in a debate ought to be, does a voter, if they watch the entire 2 hours, have a full sense of who they think they would vote for at that moment in time? This is the first one. I'll go back as often as they want. I'm going to do a Minnesota governor's debate as well. I have air ticket will travel in an effort to persuade the Republican Party to get away from the Presidential Debate Commission as far as they can run, and to declare so now, and to go out and find the Guy Bensons and the Mary Catherine Hams and the Kim Stressel, all the various people out there who could so easily moderate a debate. Molly Hemingway, Mark Hemingway, so many different people could moderate a debate that would do it fairly, informatively, and don't have a dog in the fight. I don't have a dog in this fight. I haven't endorsed anyone. I haven't slammed anyone. I'm a complete neutral. I'm in Switzerland. I'm staying in Switzerland until after the 2024 elections are finished, the 2024 primary nominating. I'm just going to be in Switzerland. In 2022, in the general, I'll tell you about all the Republicans running, just like Glenn Youngkin is running. And speaking of Glenn Youngkin, number one story this morning in the rundown. Border arrests have soared to an all-time high, new CBP statistics show. U.S. authorities detained more than 1.7 million migrants along the Mexico border during the 2021 fiscal year. It is the arrests by the Border Patrol soared to the highest levels ever recorded, according to unpublished U.S. Customs and Border Protection data obtained by The Washington Post. Illegal crossings began rising last year, but skyrocketed in the months after President Biden took office. As CBP arrests increased this past spring, Biden described the rise as consistent with historical seasonal norms. But the busiest month came during the sweltering heat of July and August, when more than 200,000 migrants were taken into custody. There was a confirmation hearing for Chris Magnus, the Tucson police chief that President Biden has nominated to lead CPB. Republican senators pressed him on this crisis. All the details are at Washington Post. Now, why did I mention that in connection with Glenn Youngkin? The key issue in Virginia is education, and everyone knows it. And I'm going to play you a clip of Terry McAuliffe sinking under the waves of Morning Joe. He can't even tread water in the baby pool that is Morning Joe. Terry McFaltering is who he is. But many people vote for many reasons, and border hawks are aghast. And there are some border hawks in Virginia. There's some border hawks in every state. You don't have to live near the border to be concerned about 1.7 million people entering the country without permission, this making claims and disappearing into the interior. Some, a handful, are dispatched immediately. And now President Biden has adopted the return to Mexico policy wait in Mexico policy that President Trump used adeptly. And the border, the left is crazy about that. But meanwhile, there will be people turning up. There is a motivated base for the Republican Party, and independents are breaking towards towards Glenn Youngkin for one big issue. Terry McAuliffe will not answer questions on education. Here is this, this is an amazing episode on Morning Joe yesterday, cut number six.
Ask you about these dueling ads that you and Glenn Youngkin have up going back and forth about part of a comment you made at that debate on September 28th. You said, quote, this is part of your comment, I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach. Now, most parents, if you look at polling in Virginia and across the country, believe, yes, of course, they should have a say. Yeah. They elect school boards, they serve on school boards, and they should have an answer and some say in what's happening. So what did you mean when you said that? Because Glenn Youngkin has made this one of the centerpieces of his campaign.
Well, first of all, I'm a father of five children, so I have been very involved in the education. Dorothy and I have all five of our children. The issue is for us is how do you build the best education system? And you do. You get school boards, and if you don't like them, you vote them off the school boards. And that's how it should work. But on education, I am running because of education. That's why all the teachers have endorsed me. I'm going to raise teacher pay, get every child access to broadband. Let me be clear. On education, Willie, his economic plan, 43,000 teachers will be cut. He wants to take money from public schools to give it to private schools. He has said that repeatedly. That's the big issue. Washington Post has endorsed me. They've gone so far as to say that Glenn Youngkin's economic plan will destroy our state. It will destroy our education system. They said the other day that if Glenn Youngkin is elected governor of Virginia, Virginians will have made a grave mistake. On education, I was the education governor. I redesigned all my high schools last time. I put a record $1 billion into our schools. I got rid of five standardized tests. We had way too many tests. Teachers were teaching to test. Children are learning to memorize. We want cognitive thought process. We want critical reasoning. We got to teach it. I call it street smarts. Can you figure out a problem? So when it comes to, he doesn't have much to talk about, Willie, because he has no issues. And it's just going back to this critical race theory. It's always a backdoor. And as I say, it's a racist dog whistle, and I'm sick of it.
But if you, just to be clear, do you believe that parents should have a voice in their children's education? If they don't like what their kids are coming home and telling them about their experience in the classroom, what should they do about it?
Yeah, of course they do. And they do have a say. As I say, they elect school boards. I mean, it's nonsensical what he's trying to say. Of course they do. As I say, a parent of five children. We have a great education system here in Virginia. We're ranked number one on higher ed. We're number four on K through 12. And when I'm done as governor, we will be number one on K through 12. We're number four today. We got a great education system here in Virginia. Parents are very involved, just as I was involved. But we've got to invest. We've got to raise teacher pay. We've got to make sure the at-risk 3- and 4-year-olds get access to pre-K. It's about 41,000. And I want to make sure every child has broadband. I mean, think during COVID, 14% of our students didn't have broadband, 60% rural, 40% urban. They're supposed to be learning online, yet they can't learn online because they don't have access to the pipe. So what do? They got to go to a parking lot at McDonald's to get on a Wi-Fi hotspot. That is wrong. I'm going to fix that as governor. In 2 years, every child will have access to broadband when I'm governor.
Did you notice he didn't answer Willie's question? Because he can't. Glenn Youngkin responded with an ad. I'm going to play it for you again. Terry McAuliffe is dying. He's drowning. He cannot even handle the waiting pool that is Morning Joe. Why is he on Morning Joe? Because he's losing the Northern Virginia suburbs. That's the only, I mean, God love Morning Joe. Their audience consists of about 100,000 people at 7 o'clock in the morning in the kitchen before they go into their SES jobs. That's it. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about American standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Dmitry Sevastopoulou has published his second scoop in 5 days on the Chinese hypersonic program, which ought to alarm everyone in the free world, including Israel. I'm joined by the former ambassador from Israel to the United States, Michael Oren. Dr. Oren, former deputy minister as well as former ambassador to the United States and the UN. Dr. Oren, good morning to you. Since we last spoke, the world sort of changed. At least the world became aware that China has changed. Hypersonic missiles in space orbiting the globe presents an entirely new challenge. Did it get much attention in Israel?
It did not, Hugh. Welcome back.
Thank you.
To be with you today, as always. They didn't get much of a challenge. We're facing so many different challenges. You know that our prime minister is meeting with Putin this week, and I mean the big issue there is going to be Iran, and that Israel cannot coexist with a Iran that has a threshold capacity. Not that Iran has a bomb, but has the ability to make a bomb. And why it's important with Russia? Because Russia is a world leader in armaments development and has then introduced to our area systems that didn't exist before, like the S-300, the S-400 anti-aircraft systems, which can take down an aircraft from Syria, can take down an aircraft coming out of our Ben-Gurion airport. And so making the Russians aware of the fact that Israel may well have to act preemptively against an Iranian threshold capacity is extremely, extremely important for us. We're dealing with very advanced systems. The big war with China is going to be about the China-Iranian strategic deal. It's a 25-year deal, which is estimated to be about $400 billion. Imagine that, over 25 years. In exchange for discounted Iranian oil, China will be helping Iran with a number of development programs, but also with weapons development.
Weapons.
Can you imagine
sure.
that? So, the Chinese having access or the Iranians having access to these type of missile technologies, it's got to figure in our long-term strategic planning.
Now, you're a historian, Dr. Oren, and so when I use the term Second Cold War, I do so knowing you know what that means. It has a start date, whether it's the Fulton speech or the launch of the H-bomb, whatever, and it had an end date when the wall came down. The start date of the Second Cold War is probably when Xi Jinping became General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party. We just weren't unaware of it. And Angus King, who I know you must know, Senator King said yesterday, hypersonic weapons are strategic game changers with the dangerous potential to fundamentally undermine strategic stability as we know it. The U.S. cannot lag in this development or allow for blind spots as we monitor the progress of our competitors. Well, we are lagging behind, and we're actually going to need Israel to catch up for us, because I believe you introduced me to the concept of directed energy weaponry, and that's what you're going to need to defend against this.
Yeah, and also Perot, a long time, as we come to the end of the memorandum of understanding, the 10-year memorandum of understanding of aid, a $38 billion package that President Obama signed with Prime Minister Netanyahu back in 2016. As we come to the end of that period, we have to really rethink our strategic relationship with the United States. Rather than having been sort of a United States just aiding Israel, it should be United States cooperating with Israel in these advanced technologies, because Israel is a world leader in these technologies, in concentrated energy, just laser technology, in AI, in cyber defense. All this has come to play, and there can really be no better ally in the world for the United States and the state of Israel in all these areas. Just to give you a small statistic, Hugh, Israel accounts for over 20% of the world's investment in cybersecurity, which means we're punching about 200 times above our weight in terms of our population. We're less than 10 million people.
Well, I agree completely, and I don't know that Team Biden has given that assurance, or if you're going to get it out of the socialist left Democratic squad, which is very anti-Israel. I'm sure you know there are enough votes to block anything that the Democrats want to get done within their caucus, because they don't want to bring a measure to the floor that requires Republican support to pass. They don't want to have the squad defect. What do you make of what happened on the squad's defection and then the dust up over what AOC crying on the floor had to do? I mean, it was really crazy.
It was disconcerting. I called it in the Israeli press, I called it the shot across the prow. And yes, ultimately we did get the aid for Iron Dome, and we're deeply appreciative of that. And it's a bipartisan issue, and we have to be appreciative of that. But I think this could be what happened around the Iron Dome legislation is a harbinger of things to come. The situation could get significantly worse, and that's why I think it's about time now to rethink our strategic relations with the United States. The big challenge, you're not going to believe this, the big challenge going down the line is going to be whether people like, you know, the squad are going to be interested in actually enhancing America's security, not Israel's security, especially if enhancing security for the United States means somehow cooperating with Israel.
Well, that is, to me, the key thing. When we, I was in Israel last when Ambassador John Bolton was the National Security Advisor. I saw you at the time. And the number one topic they were discussing with Prime Minister Netanyahu was the deal struck between the PRC and Israel. Has that rethinking under Bennett commenced about really we can't cozy up to the PRC like perhaps Bibi was going to do before the Iranian deal with China came down?
I've had two meetings during the Obama administration, the Trump administration. I think it hasn't changed. The United States expresses its deep concern about Israel's relationship with China. The Chinese are building our northern and southern point, the ports. They're building the subway system across the street from my house to keep me awake all night. They're here, and Israel needs that very efficient and cheap labor for purely economic reasons. We also can't overlook the fact that Chinese are entering the Middle East at the time the United States was withdrawing from the Middle East. China is building reportedly two major ports on the Persian Gulf. They built the largest naval base in Africa, in Djibouti, at the entrance of the Red Sea. I can't get more strategic than that. And Israel can't ignore it. If you want to make the demand that Israel not engage in any type of deep commercial relationship with China, how about America not leaving the Middle East?
I agree, and especially on Iran. But it does come down to a second Cold War requiring there be two sides and clarity about who is with what. And I think it's going to be Iran, Russia, and their parent power, China, against the free world. I don't see how we get around that. Russia.
I have a bleaker view. You remember the bipolar world of the Cold War, right? Two superpowers.
Yes.
I think we're going back to a bipolar world. The two superpowers are Russia and China. That's a bleaker view. I go back to a story. I had a conversation with Henry Kissinger. This must be about 2009. I just started as ambassador. And I said to Dr. Kissinger, I said, does anybody in the White House know that if you make a nuclear deal with Iran, then you will be giving up, the control of the Middle East, hegemony of the Middle East? And he said to me, and I don't want to do the accent too much, he said, what makes you think anybody in the White House cares about America, hegemony of the Middle East?
Yep. Well, he's a realist.
Today is who cares about, who really cares about American strength? Who cares about America's leading the free world, America being the policeman of the world? And this is a very deep question, and not only about Republicans, it's a question about the United States generally, American people. Do Americans want to be the policeman of the world anymore?
I am moderating a debate of six would-be Republican replacements for Rob Portman on Sunday night in Columbus, Ohio, and national security will be high on that because it matters to Republican voters. I can't believe we're about to spend $4 trillion more dollars or $3 trillion more dollars, not a penny for defense. Michael, let's close on good news. Prime Minister Bennett announced this week, it was the first story I covered, that he is going to make a trip to the UAE to meet with MBZ, the ruler of that country. I think that is a great thing. I think that's an important thing. The Abraham Accords continue to mature, develop, and that is an important visit. And do you have any details on when it's going to happen?
It's going to happen. It's happening shortly. We haven't had so much back and forth now. That, it's almost like non-news here because we're so used to having relations with the AU. The bigger headline is that Bennett has been invited by Modi to India. And, people say that India is going to be isolated. This, you know, that's about a third of humanity right there.
Yeah, no. It's the real alliance is India, Japan, Australia, the U.S., Israel, and the U.K. And maybe France wants to, they'll get over their myth, and maybe they'll join that too. And then you've got the technology edge to deal with China, Russia, Iran, if you have the resolve. Last question, Dr. Oren. When do you think the threshold status question presents itself in a way that cannot be avoided by Prime Minister Bennett?
Well, I've already said again in the press here that we have to look at the winter months, which are coming very rapidly. That's a time when the skies get very cloudy, overcast, and our ability to act in the air is hindered. It's not obviated, but it's hindered. The world could be preoccupied with anything, a tsunami, who knows? And we're going to wake up one morning and find Iran with a threshold capacity, maybe beyond the threshold capacity. And Israel's going to have to act. And that's what happened, you know. It happened with North Korea. It happened with Pakistan. They had threshold capacity. One day the world looked up and said, oops, they have nuclear weapons. We can't.
Cannot happen with Iran. And at least, well, President Biden has committed to it. I don't know if he remembers that he committed to it, but he committed to them never having threshold capacity. Dr. Michael Oren, thank you. Follow him on Twitter at Dr. Michael Oren. Follow me to the next segment of today's Thursday's Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt, joined by the Washington Post, James Holman, my colleague in the opinion pages there. His brand new column, Sticks Work Better Than Carrots to Increase COVID Vaccination, so use more sticks. Good morning, James. How are you?
Good, Hugh. Good to be with you.
All right. I also believe that we're appropriate. Military, police, if you work for the government, you should get vaccinated. And if your employer wants you to get vaccinated, they can condition employment on it, depending on the collective bargaining agreement that you've got. And et cetera. When we get down to children, we need America's most persuasive person to make the ask of parents who are vaccine hesitant. I know my grandchildren will get vaccinated if it's in their medical advice. Two of them have already had COVID. One hasn't. I know the one that hasn't had it is going to get it. They're all in single digits. They're not double digits yet, so they're not eligible yet. I like the rollout of the plan. They've got 28 million doses. But how do you persuade? You can't. What are you going to send kids home and never let them come to school if their parents are vaccine hesitant? No. So they're going to come to school and get sick. But how do you persuade as opposed to carrots or sticks? Just persuade.
Yeah. And persuasion is a huge part of the task. And I actually I share your hesitation, Hugh, about not mandating, you know, 5-year olds getting the vaccine, because I do think, you know, I'm obviously very pro-vax, as that column conveys, but I don't think you should, you know, if you're losing immunity after a few months, you know, and there are unknown risks, it doesn't make sense for the state to force a 5-year-old to get a vaccine, like this. And I think that there is a big distinction between, you know, the teachers, who you do want to have the vaccine and the kids. But with the kids, I think you're right. You need to persuade. And it is unfortunate that in our polarized times, you know, you say the most persuasive person in the country has to make the case. I'm not sure who that is right now.
I know who it is, but it's not Dr. Walensky. By the way, I invited Dr. Fauci to come on today and talk about the childhood rollout. He declined. I just want people to know, Dr. Fauci is always welcome here, but he didn't want to come on and explain to a center-right audience why their kids should get vaccinated. Here's Dr. Walensky yesterday in a Zoom COVID conference Tell me what this means. Cut number two.
After we have authorization from FDA and recommendations from CDC, we will be working to scale up pediatric vaccination. That said, it will take some time. And as I just noted, as we head into these winter months, we know we cannot be complacent. We also know that from previous data that that schools that have had masks in place were 3.5 times less likely to have school outbreaks requiring school closure. So right now we are going to continue to recommend masks in all schools for all people in those schools. And we will look forward to scaling up pediatric vaccination during this period of time.
So, James Holman, if your child is going to get sent home if they're exposed, and if your child has to wear a mask, even if he or she is vaccinated, why are you going to get them vaccinated if you're at all vaccine hesitant?
Right. Rochelle Walensky is obviously not a good messenger.
No, you know, it's just
that was
terrible.
A lot of jargon, and I think on time and again, she's proven not be the right person to be running the CDC.
No, it's a horrible collapse of messaging. Dr. Fauci is too doggone old to persuade. He's too politicized to persuade. Dr. Collins is doing the gentlemanly thing and stepping down. But the most persuasive person in America is Oprah Winfrey. She had the largest sustained audience for the longest period of time in television in recent years. And so you go get Oprah to sit down with a bunch of parents and you tape it, you cut it, you slice it, and you dice it. This is not rocket science, James. Why can't they say the obvious thing? If they're vaccinated, if a child is vaccinated, the mask comes off. If they're not, the mask stays on because we don't want them to get sick. Isn't that the best incentive?
Yes, it is. And the problem is that, you know, if you're not mandating, then you get into a situation where a bunch of kids in the class are wearing a mask and other kids aren't. And
yes.
Teachers get
yes, you do.
That and, but then
why would we worry about that? That's the reality, though. Teachers do get worried about it. People's feelings are going to get hurt, but we're impeding the education of all, and they are big impediments to learning. They are significant impediments to learning, and with downsides that are being under discussed. Why can't they just be clear and direct? Get vaccinated, the mask goes away.
They should. That's what they should do. And this is one of those things where, you know, they're being kind of the rigidity in messaging is undermining ultimately the whole credibility of their message.
And I wanted to contrast it. I liked your column because I agree with mandates where they're appropriate. Contrast with the Telegraph. You know, I read the Telegraph every morning and they cover COVID in Great Britain a lot. Headline, over 50s can book a COVID booster without NHS invitation. So they're ahead of us on boosters. Just go in and get it. Number two, politics latest news. Get your booster jab or risk your freedom, Sajid Javid. There's a health minister. Sajid Javid is one of the savviest, most effective politicians in modern UK time. Their messaging has always been so much better than ours. I think the Biden administration made a huge mistake when they said they would follow the CDC and not direct the CDC. Do you think they're rethinking that?
Well, it's a hard one, you know, because that it's one of those things where the job of a president isn't. You know, and the science is contradictory in a lot of cases. The science doesn't, you know, with the whole, it's one of those stupid catchphrases, follow the science, because ultimately the job of a president is to weigh the advice of his public health experts and the advice of his economic advisors and the reality on the ground and come up with something that's smart. So I do think Biden boxed himself in. And on the other hand, to your point, I mean, I think it is risky. I think we would all be criticizing Biden if he was telling the CDC what guidance to put out instead of, you know, letting the experts.
I disagree on this. I disagree. I think if the CDC is limited to giving them scientific facts, it is up to policymakers, elected policymakers, to act on them. And that how we got into this bureaucratic decisions on what we do and don't do as a society is completely beyond me, because the scientific facts for keeping masks on after you're vaccinated are so few as to be non-existent. And the downplaying of the dangers, the refusal to get the ivermectin study done, which Dr. Collins has been promising me for months, they're just falling apart, James. And Ron Klain knows this. He was our colleague when he was a contributing columnist to The Washington Post for a long time. And you know he's smart. And you know he knows this. They've got to take back the controls. But here's the problem. And I'll get your reaction to this. President Biden went up to Delaware. Yes, I went to Scranton yesterday. It's a cliche, right? And it's such a hackneyed cliche. And here's what he said that just made, what? Cut number 10.
Here, if you take a few years. Scranton is where I played shortstop in the very little league in the first year to put up my dad and help build the field down there. And spent a lot of time at Cinny's buying penny candy and Hank Sobeys on Woodlawn Street watching movies of the Roozie on the weekend and trying to reenact all they did. And when you watch those movies, I think I was told, I don't know if it was true, I was the only kid in my area that I was able to walk across the Lackey on that pipe that was just a brother. If you found the Lackey, you were a Lackey. You were in trouble.
So, Jim, what do you think that, what's that convey?
Oh, the 50-minute speech. And I think that's
a 40-second ramble. What's it convey?
For a long time, as everyone recalls, you know, Biden is obviously, that's who he is a rambling man. Even when he was much younger, he would ramble like that. But they were, you know, having him just read from the prompter for a long time and give very, very short statements. After he won the Democratic nomination, they really, you know, when he was campaigning from his basement last year, he would give, you know, 3 or 4 minute speeches. And it's because his own aides don't trust him to talk for 50 minutes.
Yeah. Grandpa's in the house. Grandpa at Thanksgiving. I know I'm going there too. I'm 65. Give me another 15 years. I'll be grandpa at the Thanksgiving table talking about down at the Robbins Theater or the Warner in Warren, Ohio, and riding my bike across town to the 422. I mean, I'll be doing it to whatever unwitting grandchild has been seated next to me that they have to do grandpa duty. But honestly, you can't persuade a country this way. Do you think he has any chance of persuading Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema of doing what he wants?
Well, what Biden is gambling is, you know, right now he's, even though that was an outside game speech, he's playing the inside game. He's focused on getting something passed by October 31st so that he can have some results to talk about in the G20 and then, more importantly, at the climate summit, because there's so much climate stuff in this bill, although it's largely being taken out. But right now what Biden is gambling you is that he spent months patiently listening to all these Democrats complain and say what they wanted, and he really has not been forceful about trying to shape this bill. And now here, as he tries to close the deal, he's gambling that that gives him credibility on the inside to say what's going to be in it and what's not going to be in it.
James, do you really believe he's focused on anything? Or are you talking about Ron Klain being focused on something?
Well, I think Biden is desperate for a deal. I think Biden would accept anything that will pass, which is why ultimately something is going to pass. It's going to be pared down. It's going to be in the ones. But Biden is determined to pass legislation. Because he feels his whole agenda depends on.
It's falling apart. Kyrsten Sinema is saying no taxes. They're down to 1.9. They started at 7 trillion. They're down to 1.9. They're trying all sorts of gimmicks. It's falling apart. And I just want to point out, the emperor has no clothes. Joe isn't a closer anymore. If he ever was back in the Obama years, they sent him up to the Hill a couple of times. President Biden isn't a closer because, by gosh, when you hit 80 or 79, you just can't close.
The problem, I mean, I think that, again, they're so desperate to get anything that, you know, the White House is telling congressional Democrats this morning that there aren't going to be any corporate tax hikes in this bill. And, you know, and that's because of Sinema. But what it means is that it's going to be nearly $2 trillion in new spending that is largely not paid for.
It's inflation. It's just complete inflation fuel.
You know, but the idea that, you know, obviously there are pay-fors, but this is one of those things where, like, they're just so desperate to make a deal that it does seem hard to imagine that it's not going to add to
all
the
right.
debt.
I got to quickly cover Youngkin, and I've already voted for Youngkin. I don't know if you live in Virginia. And he's creaming retread Terry, and Terry appeared on Morning Joe yesterday, and he can't even swim in that pool. He's in the waiting pool and he's drowning. What do you make of that race?
I think Youngkin is going to win. I think it's going to be close. I'm going to cover the Kamala Harris is doing a rally for McAuliffe and Prince.
Oh, that'll help
tonight.
Oh, that'll help.
I think the intensity is all on Youngkin's side.
Oh, I can't wait to get that audio. I wonder if they'll get 100 people. You know, it is all falling apart, and I'm not happy about it because we're also in a Cold War and we're losing that. James Holman, always a pleasure, James. I can't wait to hear the report on that. You poor man. There's a good reason not. I'm going to go moderate a Senate debate in Ohio on Sunday night, and that's going to be fun. But a Harris-McAuliffe rally, back to the future. Oh, relieffactor.com. We got to get a bag to Holman. Really, we do. If James is going to do that kind of heavy lifting, go to a Kamala Harris and Terry McAuliffe rally. Hey, Dwayne, how much do I have to pay you to go to a Terry McAuliffe, Kamala Harris rally? Does it take two bags of Relief Factor or four bags of Relief Factor?
That's going to look like, by the way, when Kamala Harris does that rally? You know what that's going to look like? That's going to look like the victory parade of the Chicago Sky, the WNBA champ.
You betcha. That's what it is.
And there was like four people watching that parade.
They're going to come out. If we get Relief Factor down to that rally, they might come out. Go get your Relief Factor. $19.95 gets you started on a three-week trial supplied. Senator Talent, Jim Talent, and the Bipartisan Policy Center is up next. Stay tuned, America. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt, joined now by former United States Senator Jim Talent, now with the Bipartisan Policy Center. You can follow Jim at Jim Talent. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning, you. Well, you've been all over this hypersonic story. Good for you.
Well, Dimitri over at the Financial Times has been all over it. I'm just following his writing. It is the position, it's my position, that any Democrat senator who wants to can go in the middle of these negotiations and get a few billion dollars for hypersonic accelerated research. Am I right?
Yes, I believe they could do that. I don't even think that there'd be an objection or a major objection in the Senate to it. And, look, we need a concerted approach to this because, you know, you're right. We're in a Cold War, and they want to become the middle kingdom of the world. We reported on this in the China Commission in a chapter in our report last year. I co-chaired that hearing, and it's very clear that their objectives are global. And, if we don't want to be under their thumb, we better prepare to resist.
They want the Finlandization of the world. Now, that sounds crazy, but it's not. The Middle Kingdom really believed that at the time that they were the Middle Kingdom, and they want it back. And General Secretary Xi started the Second Cold War. And we don't get to say whether or not it's happening, but when they're sending up two hypersonic global orbiters, and we haven't done that once, there is a real missile gap as opposed to the John F. Kennedy's missile gap of 1960. True or false?
In hypersonics. And you, can I just take a minute and
please
just say to your listeners what this actually means for the United
please
States? Yeah. Okay, so it means we abandon our allies, our presence, our influence in the Indo-Pacific. We recognize their sovereignty over Taiwan. That's a given. But the Senkaku Islands, which Japan controls, those are the Spratlys that they want. Their right to treat the whole South China Sea as their sovereign waters. We trade and travel, at least in Asia, and move on their terms. If they don't want us to sell something to Vietnam or Singapore, we don't. They have full access to our markets and our technology. No more tariffs or WTO complaints on the terms that they want. And we don't criticize, of course, anything they do, either genocide at home or any of their deals around the world. And if we resist any of that, they punish us, at least in the cyber domain. That's what they want when they say they want to be the middle kingdom of the world. Okay. Now, you've asked, yes, are we in a Cold War? Well, if we don't want to accept that, then yeah, we're in the Cold War.
We're in the Second Cold War. And I would point out as well, the only analog I can come up with this in world history is the Joseph Chamberlain Commonwealth system when Britain ruled the waves. And you did not trade outside of that system without the express permission of the crown. And in India, you didn't do anything in India without the express permission of the crown. There were, it was an empire. That's mm-hmm. what they want.
It's the old imperial model adjusted with some aspects of Marxist-Leninism. I mean, again, I'd encourage people who want to read this, the 2020 report of the U.S. China Economic and Security Review Commission. It's uscc.gov. There's a chapter on it.
Well, tomorrow, Captain Jerry Hendricks is on to talk about the actual technical ability. But I want to underscore again, Senator Angus King is right in his assessment. This is a huge development, and it's one that we are behind on. But he has the present ability, as does any Democratic senator, to address this missile gap. All they have to do is make it a must-have in this package. I just want people to understand that.
The only thing I don't know you is whether it would be in order to put it on reconciliation, but they could get it. If they made it a condition of their vote, then they would get it in one form or another, yeah.
And so it's the Democratic Party's responsibility. And I got to quickly ask you, I know if you've been listening to the show, you've heard me play the Joe Biden speech. You've known the president a long time, Senator Talent. Do you think he is up to the, do you think he's actually negotiating the deal? Who's negotiating this deal? It can't be Joe Biden.
Well, I've been saying for months that, in my view, he's clearly impaired. I don't know anybody who knows Joe Biden and has seen him, speaking publicly who doesn't.
I use the term infirm.
It seems pretty obvious to me. So I don't know what he's like in private. You know, these sorts of things, it depends on the context. But I think he clearly has an issue.
I call him infirm. I don't think he's impaired, but I think he's an 80-year-old man.
If you want to call it that. I'm not a doctor. You know, I don't know the situation. But it's, all you got to do is look at him and then compare, watch clips or speeches of Joe Biden in the past. He never had problems putting words together.
But they say he's going to bring these negotiations to a close. He can't actually do that. I don't think people quite get what it takes to hammer out a deal. You've been there. You've done that. Do you think this president with Schumer and Pelosi and Sinema and Manchin can close a deal?
Well, I think the bigger problem, is that they can't. I'm not sure the deal is there to be done for them because I'm just not sure they can hold together enough for their vote. In other words, they're going to lose one side or the other as they move to make a compromise. I think that's the bigger problem, but we'll see.
We'll see. Jim Talent on Twitter. Thank you, Senator. Coming right back. Hour number three, Senator Marsha Blackburn kicks it off on The Hugh Hewitt Show.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.